You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for July 2000. This is issue number 184, and I'm your host and the publisher of the DX Audio Service, Fred Vobey. On this edition, we've got a lot of information, of course, the usual comms, and of course, we get to find out whatever happened to that KTSA tower. So let's just toss it right over to Jerry Starr with a look at the AM switch.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News Magazine. This month's reference number is 482, and as always, we begin with call interchanges. On 620 WKNI, Lexington, Alabama becomes WZNN. 820 WZTM, Largo, Florida changing to WMGG. 940 KXUX in Bend, Oregon, first asked to change to KMGX, then they had that change set aside. They are now changing to KICE. 950 WCNZ, Sheboygan, Wisconsin becomes WCLB. 1040 WSKE, Everett, Pennsylvania becomes WZSK. 1060 WNRX in Tupelo, Mississippi changing to WKMQ. 1190 WAJL, Pine Castle, Florida becomes WIXL. On 1090, WKCV in Kingsport, Tennessee will change to WHGG. 1170, KVVS in Windsor, Colorado changing to KJJD. 1230, KRSY, Alamogordo, New Mexico becomes KREZ. 1230, WUBE, Cincinnati, Ohio will be WDBZ. On 1260, KGIL in Beverly Hills, California will change to KJAZ. Where will that call come from? Well, on 1340, KJAZ in Oroville, California changes to KEWE. On 1350, WGIA Blackshear, Georgia becomes WXRB. 1370, KAWW in Heber Springs, Arkansas changing to KOWS. 1460 KGMZ Honolulu, Hawaii becomes KRTR. 1480 WQKS in Hopkinsville, Kentucky will change to WHVO. Also on 1480 WSHP in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania changes to WEEO. And on 1530 KLEC in England, Arkansas becomes KROP. One grant of interest in Canada on 1290 CHRM in Matane, Quebec will be changing to FM 105.3. And in otherness on 580 KJMJ, Alexandria, Louisiana, this formerly silent station is back on the air. 1050 KBBV in Big Bear Lake, California, this station has been silent. They are now temporarily back on the air with a mighty 15 watts while they're facilitating their move to Loma Linda, California. 1080 WSSI in Carthage, Mississippi has returned to the air. 1230 WMOU in Berlin, New Hampshire has gone silent. Also on 1230 WABN in Abingdon, Virginia has gone silent. 1400 WBTB in Beaufort, South Carolina. This silent station is now on the air, relaying WNBR-FM. 1450 WDLK in Dadeville, Alabama has gone silent, but according to the station, they will return sometime this summer. 1550 WKQV in Pittston, Pennsylvania has returned to the air. They were only silent for a little less than a month. 1590 WDBL Springfield, Tennessee has also gone silent. And that will wrap it up for this month. Here in Ohio, we're having one of our rare warm days. But at the moment, we're going to send you down to some place where it's warm just all the time. Here's
fun-loving John Bowker. Power play fun. Play fun. Play fun. Play fun.
To contribute to the Travelog, send your top-of-the-hour IDs to John Bowker, 1811 Fort Duquesne Drive, Sun City Center, Florida, 33573. Remember to start recording a minute before and after each top-of-the-hour ID. And make sure you have the legal ID in the recording.
Hello, everyone. This is the Travelogue segment of the DX Audio Service. What you're going to be hearing for the next few minutes are recordings made of the legal station breaks of AM broadcast stations from the western half of the United States. And they all have one thing in common. They all broadcast at 570 on your radio dial. Now, just about all the stations on this channel operate with 5,000 watts, There are a few exceptions, as usual, and I'll try to call those out as we hear from them, but I want to say a special hello to Josh Owens in North Carolina for his call and the cassette he's putting together, and to Mark Durenberger, who made his annual trip to the western lands of the United States and sent a most comprehensive pair of tapes that will fill a lot of gaps in the Travelog collection. So thanks to you both, and to everyone else who offers support for all of the DX Audio Service columns. And today we're going to cover over 10,000 miles with our dial set at 570, but, you know, as I was ending last month's travelogue, my eyes skipped over a station I knew darn well was there, because I'd spent a day and a half in Paducah, Kentucky. So we'll start with them as we begin the July 2000 DX Audio Service travelogue.
We interrupt this program for a special NASCAR broadcast, the Lane Co. 350, live from Nazareth Speedway, here on AM 570 WKYX, Paducah.
NASCAR Racing, next on MRN Radio.
Racing on the NASCAR Busch Series is demanding.
Okay, well, here we go again in the upper Midwest, where my problems multiply. And this month is the worst of any month in the whole trip up the dial. You see, that nice guy, Jerry Starr, who introduces me each month, is heavily involved with a number of competitors of the station you're about to hear. But heck, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Reagan, Voyager sailing along with NH1 News. I'm Peter Burns.
You know, I always thought their simple slogan was kind of neat, and I don't know why other stations don't use it.
We're in the valley for good, WKBN Youngstown.
You can't beat that, can you? Can't you hear that? You know, we're in Toledo for good. That sounds real nice. Now, would you believe it? At 570 on the dial, there's not one single station in Michigan, Indiana, or Illinois. So our travelogue takes a flying leap to the land of the Badger. And we had to come in pretty close on this one. You see, this next station operates with only 250 watts.
Win a prize for the best news tip of the month. Call us, 732-0123. We're Information Radio, WMAM, Marinette, Menominee.
NBC Radio News. The director of a DNA lab in Maryland was on the hot seat at the O.J. Simpson trial. Correspondent Steve Futterman reports.
And now, dear friends, you can check your log right along with me. But again, there are no 570 stations in the states of Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Arkansas, or Louisiana. The whole west bank of the Mississippi River. So we now move inland once we get that far south, and we enter the metroplex of yore.
Company,
WFAA was a very early station in the United States, among the very earliest, in fact. And as things developed, they shared time with another station in the nearby city called WBAP. Oh, you've heard of that one. And every day, back when I was a kid, they'd ring a cowbell on the air, maybe around, 5 o'clock? In the evening, and that would mean that 570 was now WBAP, and for the rest of the evening. But if you tuned to 820 on the dial, you'd find that WBAP had left the air with the sound of a cowbell, and it was now WFAA. And then the next morning, they'd switch back. But as with everything else, all good things had to come to an end. And finally, WFAA wound up with a 5,000-watt signal all to itself. And, of course, WBAP wound up at 820 on the dial with its paint-burning 50,000-watt signal. So with all of that out of the way, the station, of course, was then sold. And by 1984, 570 in Dallas sounded like this.
Standing the test of time, the classic rock and roll legends live on AM stereo. 570 K-Rocks, KRQX, Dallas-Fort Worth.
Thank you!
And that lasted about 2 years before the call letters were again changed.
You're listening to AM 57 KLDD Dallas-Fort Worth. K-Oldie. All oldie. All the time.
And on our most recent trip to that part of the country,
KLIF Dallas-Fort Worth, KKLF Dennis and Sherman. They're both the local talk station. 570 Cliff. 54 degrees at 10:01. Good morning. I'm Mark Lambert.
You know, they do the same kind of thing that WFLA does here in the Tampa Bay market. Maybe a lot of other stations, too. They have a weak area where their signal just doesn't penetrate the way they want. So they buy a station out there in that weak area and just simulcast everything. That's what KLIF was just announcing they have done. Oh, yes, there was that classic case in New York City where 1280 in the city bought 1290 out on the island and put 1290 off the air so they could change their pattern. And as I think it through, there have been several examples of that. But so this was a little bit different. Now, you know, for many years I was an avid reader of Broadcasting magazine, mainly because our library where I work subscribed to it, and it was a kick to see all the ads for stations and to learn what was new on the dials and all that every week. One of the few ads that still stand out in my mind were the series from this next station. And let me tell you, this next station covers an enormous area of the Plains States.
570 WNAX, your five-state leader in markets.
Yes, they entertained us for many hours as we drove from Mitchell, South Dakota, down through Vermilion, on our way to the Omaha convention that Ernie Wasilowski ran in the early 1990s. And say, by the way, you are coming to Lima this year, aren't you, over Labor Day, Lima, Ohio? There's still time to make a reservation, of course. And I'm looking forward to meeting as many of you as can possibly make it to Lima, Ohio, over Labor Day.
KGRT, Las Cruces.
I'm Bob Schmidt. The sound that fills the air in Killeen, Texas, scene of what appears to be the worst mass shooting in American history.
Oh, there. Las Cruces is a place that we've visited several times. It's the first sign of life as you drive several hours south of Albuquerque on the interstate. And KGRT runs full 5,000 watts during the day, but drop down to 155 watts at night, and they kind of get lost, I have to admit. But that's to be in conformance with the international NARBA, the NARBA agreement with Mexico in that case particularly. And so we head to the northwest, to the Great Salt Lake, surrounded by those beautiful hills that are full of music.
KLUB in Salt Lake City, featuring beautiful music 24 hours a day.
You know, I always thought KLUB was a real neat call sign, too. You can do so much with it. And just to show you how highly they regard my opinion, in 1998, guess what? That's right, they changed it.
Kissin AM, KISN, Salt Lake City.
And our final version of 570 in Salt Lake City finds the station with not fewer than six sister stations.
This is Success Stories of the American Dream. I'm host Richard Taviter. We're going to news. Don't forget to tune in next week at noon, Sunday at noon. Patricia Aberdeen will be on the show, the author of Mega Trends. Interesting prediction she has about a woman in the White House. Coming up.
This is KNRS, Salt Lake City.
570 KNU. News starts now.
It's 2 o'clock from the 24-hour 570 KNU Center. I'm Scott Stevenson, where it's 51 under rainy.
Okay, and on to the southwest, to the City of Angels on the Pacific Rim.
Will the wolf survive?
That's the question of the morning.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, good. Yeah. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. It's 9 o'clock, 57 KLAC Los Angeles. It's a Mall Right Communications Group station. And now, Paul Johnson.
All righty. And that station has, over the years, had a great deal of influence in the Southern California area. OK, Okay, let's move up to the north end of the Golden State. And this whole operation of this next station, the studios and the whole thing, are right out there on US 395. So as you drive north out of Alturas, California, you go right by the whole station.
And High Pro Dog Food, a large bag for only $12.99. The place to stop in Bieber is the Red Barn.
Doyle, California. This is KKFJ Alturas, reaching out to you.
USDA Radio Network News. This is Joel McGuire. U.S. Envoy Dennis Ross is pessimistic about Middle East peace talks set to start Monday in Washington.
Now, Alturas is only about 40 miles from the Oregon border, and that's probably a good thing because there are no 570 stations in the state of Oregon either. So that takes us up to the home of the Mariners. I say that only to make Ken Honest Chuck perk up his ears, because he always gives directions according to the professional ball team in the city, so I can't.
News and not back for the gold on all oldies.
KBI, Seattle.
Actually, you know, KBI has a number of interesting logos.
Good morning, everybody. This is Humble Hob. You're listening to KVI Seattle. It's 8 a.m. all over the great Northwest.
57 KVI Seattle.
And here's how KVI produces a relaxed image when it wants to. Back in the 1960s, it did, anyway.
Downtown Seattle, happy Sunday to you all.
Isn't that great? You know, I wish stations had the time to do that these days. That goes back, as I mentioned, to the 1960s for KVI in Seattle. Well, tell you what, let's go west some more. Yes, west from Seattle. You know, across the wide Pacific.
The Big 57, Music Power, KATB, Agana.
Is it the largest Burger King in the world is in Agana, Guam? Can you believe it? And quickly, though, coming back to this continent, we're going to head north and see what's going on up in Saskatchewan. And I'll tell you one thing, the licensed power for this next Canadian station is 10,000 watts. Very standard.
All your country favorites, Southwest Radio, CKSW 570, Source Current, CJSN 1490 in Shaunavon. Good morning. I'm Grant Chu. Charlie made you there. I do it for the money.
Okay, and one final stop this month, another 10,000 water.
World Wildlife Fund. Stimulating talk radio. This is Kitchener's Information Superstation, 570 CKGO.
Welcome back to Dotto on Data. Through the top of the hour, we're going to be talking with Glenn Beeswanger.
And there, my friends, is what we have on tape at this time, at least for stations operating at 570 on the AM dial. You know, there are two cities with stations in this country I'd love to have a tape on that we're missing. Russell Springs in Kentucky and Laihui in Hawaii. They both have 570 stations, and we just don't have a clean recording of either one of them. So if anyone can get a clean ID on them and would be able to make a cassette tape, would you send it to Fred Volby? I'll pick it up from him on Labor Day. But come to think of it, I'd rather pick it up from you in Lima, Ohio, on Labor Day when Linda and I are out at the fabulous Millennium Convention of the National Radio Club. In Lima, Ohio, over Labor Day, we're going to be getting there on the first day of September. And we're looking forward to meeting all of you there, too. Well, that's enough for me for this month, but you haven't begun to hear it all yet. In fact, here comes Bruce Cotty and his terrific DX Digest. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, John, and hello, DXers. And this month's DX Digest, perhaps one of the least understood and most underused techniques for capturing distant signals. But first, let's head back to the Northeast for another listen to 570 kilohertz. As John Bowker mentioned last month, there are no stations on 570 in New England. However, there are two in New York, and both dominate the frequency here at my New Hampshire listening post, WMCA New York and WSYR Syracuse.
All Jewish all night on the Talkline Communications Network over WMCA New York. The Dove Hiking Show comes on at 11 p.m. tonight. Stay tuned next for Moshiach in the Air.
And at the DX Startup, which is also eventful. It's 10 hours of training.
The following is sponsored by the International Campaign to bring Moshiach.
All Jewish, all night, WMCA New York, over WSYR with the antenna aimed south. Aim the antenna west, and WSYR Syracuse is on top of WMCA on 570. On the NRC DXAS email reflector, there was some discussion about how to receive distant signals on frequencies adjacent to strong local stations. In particular, reception of WESO Southbridge, Massachusetts on 970 when in the coverage area or vicinity of WCAP Lowell, Massachusetts on 980. It turns out that this scenario proved to be an excellent demonstration of ECSS, Exalted Carrier Selectable Sideband reception. ECSS is used to reduce or eliminate splashover from an adjacent frequency. The low HF 225 communications receiver user manual describes ECSS as follows. The ECSS technique makes use of the fact that with a good selective receiver capable of resolving single sideband, an AM signal can be passed through the single sideband filter, which is only wide enough to allow one sideband through. The filter must attenuate the carrier signal by at least 20 dB for this technique to work with any success. The receiver can be used in the single sideband mode with the incoming AM carrier tuned to zero beat and the accompanying sideband treated as a true single sideband signal. Either the upper or lower sideband can be selected using either the upper sideband or lower sideband mode, so interfering stations can often be eliminated. The improvement in intelligibility is often dramatic, and it is well worth trying out ECSS and developing the ability to use it. That from the low HF 225 user manual. Any communications receiver with high quality single sideband filters can be used to receive one sideband of an AM signal. Typically, the sideband used is the one furthest away from the interfering station. For example, to hear WESO on 970 without interference from WCAP on 980, use the lower sideband mode.
Talk Radio 980 WCAP Lowell now begins its broadcast day. WCAP serves the Merrimack Valley operational area.
In this example, first you will hear what 970 sounds like with interference from 980. The receiver is in the AM mode. Then I will switch to the lower sideband mode. The reduction of interference is indeed dramatic. This is WESO on 970 in the AM reception mode with splash from WCAP 980. and WESO sounding much better in the lower sideband mode, eliminating WCAP interference. Of course, there isn't much that can be done about summer lightning.
Working for Union, Holland, and Brimfield, WESO, Southbridge, Webster.
If your receiver has single sideband reception, give ECSS a try. You do need a receiver with high-quality filters, a Drake R8, AOR AR7030, or a lower-grade receiver upgraded with Collins or Kiwa filters will do the trick. More next time on the DX Digest. I'm Bruce Conti, 73 and good DX.
You're hearing the sounds of radio from around the nation and around the world. This is the DX Audio Service.
This is Mark Dernberger on location for the DX Audio Service. We're in the home of Augie Prestholt, engineer, in Nokomis, Florida. And we're resuming our discussion with Augie regarding some singular occurrences to CBS AM broadcast towers.
I can tell you a good story about KNX.
Well, let's talk about that one for a minute. September 15th, 1965, late in the evening.
We had the affiliates meeting in New York in the Hilton Hotel, kitty corner from Black Rock. Had a nice, pleasant evening, and I got out to walk around the block before going to bed, and got in bed, and saw on wood real good. Telephone rings. Over my head, grabbed, "Hello. Hi, Augie. This is Ted Denton." "Oh, hi, Ted. How are you?" He said, "Just awful. They cut the damn tower down. Some vandals came down a couple hours ago. Got the power company to come and help us. We got a bunch of cable. We're going to stick up a horizontal wire to feed for temporary use. Don't do a damn thing until I get there. Meanwhile, I'll call your boss, his boss, or the division president. They're all in the building. Now it's 12:30, 1 o'clock New York time on Sunday night in the Hilton Hotel. Do not use the telephones after midnight. Do not call rooms. I want to talk to so-and-so." "You can't." I told him what my problem was. He said, "We lost a 600 or a 500-foot tower in KNX, Los Angeles. I've got to talk to the station manager right now." "Okay, and I'll be calling two more. I got to talk to them, too." Well, I get the station manager on his way. All three of them came to my office, my hotel room.
Yeah, yeah.
1 o'clock in the morning. So I get all prepared to tell them what happened. I said, "I want to fix it right, get a good temporary up. I don't want any horsing around with a horizontal like they want to put up there. Just string on a wire won't do a damn bit of good. It serves up the people down in Long Beach, and that's all. Okay, fix it." So I got a blank check and an order, get out there and fix it. So I called Ted back.
Now Ted's out there trying to get things organized with the power company.
Ted told me they had 215-foot poles and 160-foot pole the power company could let them have for this. They were going to, you know, run a flat top.
Mm-hmm.
No. Don't do a damn thing until I get there. Well...
So you're on the opposite coast, and I don't imagine your transportation alternatives were too plentiful that time of night.
I first tried to get an airplane, I guess. Can't get a damn thing until 8 o'clock. They won't let me on any of the freighters at night. No passengers allowed, period. So I got till 8 o'clock.
To sober up.
To get a bird. No, I didn't need any sobering up.
The phone did that.
Well, went across the street into the office. I wanted a couple of books. I wanted a handbook and something else and a slide rule, and got on an 8 o'clock flight. It's less than half full. Took a seat in the middle, so I had elbow room on both sides, and got out the books. Started to calculate what the impedance of this rascal is going to be. And so I get out there, and Ted meets me at noon, and he's champing at the bit a little bit. We get back and see what the guys are doing, and I tell them what I want and how to do it and so forth.
You weren't happy with their idea of a horizontal flat top. What kind of a design were you coming up with?
Make it three-wire T, down leads the feed point, and stick these 220-footers in the right place so that the center is right over where the feed point was. So I dropped the antenna right down in the old tower well. Fit beautifully. And, well, where the ends, the T's are, I had them use two station posts about like that in tandem. They said, why don't you use these petticoat guys? They'll stand higher voltages. No, they won't stand up to the job. I don't want them. The reason is that dielectric heating will get them. I say use the station post insulators, mm-hmm. two of them in tandem. So I get the power company guys to stick the poles in, and we get the damn thing all built by about 4:35 o'clock in the afternoon.
Boy, that would have been Thursday afternoon, I think. It seems to me the tower went down Wednesday night, late?
Around midnight, yeah. We were back in the air in 21 or 22 hours with 5 kilowatts.
The record shows it was actually, 23 hours and 20 minutes. That's phenomenal. By the way, there's a story about Michael Jackson, who was on the air when it went dark, and was also on the air a day later when they came back on, when you got it back up on the air. And he said, as I was saying before being interrupted. All right, what was next?
Now, how are we going to improve it and so forth?
So you got it back on the air, although I guess you came on at 10,000 and then went back to 50. But that wasn't the end of it, I'm told.
Oh, I remember standing on top of the building by the opening where the feed line went down. Is it off the air? Yeah. God, that's hot. Three cables twisted together.
Oh, my.
The down lead. It was warm enough so that I could tell the temperature on it.
Ooh.
It had been running for some hours,
yeah.
So.
Oh, sure.
It had arrived at the final stable temperature, but we were running 60, 70 amperes base current, that stinking rascal. Then one fine morning, there's a loud bang outside the transmitter building, and the thing shuts down. Oh, it starts on fire. That's what...
The T?
Yeah, the cross arm starts a fire. That was what happened. So they had the power company come back and help. I don't remember what started the fire, but anyway, the damn thing collapsed. So they had the power company come back to rehang it. Well, the power company talked them into using the petticoat insulators, string, about so long. They got it all assembled and left, and they were about 5 minutes away from the place. Bang! It all comes down again. Those insulators won't stand it.
Yeah.
That knuckle in the ceramic heated up, and the ceramic explodes. Not a voltage, it's a matter of dielectric loss. So we get the thing finally fixed up, and meanwhile I've scrounged around and found 350 feet of tower that I get put up someplace here to get back to reasonably full muscles. To get to feeding that thing, we used it for a year and a half while we argued with insurance companies and all this sort of shit about the first failure.
But you said it was vandalism.
Yeah.
Well, your memory is phenomenal. I have a supplementary note from Larry Wickman, who is a KNX technician, who said he thought it was 6 to 9 months before you got it back on the air with a normal tower. Interestingly enough, he talked about the fact that there had been a apparently, there had been a 365-foot tower on the ground for sale. Larry remembers that you went on the air with the short tower and ordered a new 494-foot tower, and that one was put up to replace the one that went down.
Yeah.
And that at the time, you guys were thinking about possibly taking KNX directional, but that didn't work out, so you went back to non-D. He also tells us the vandals were never apprehended. You built an awful lot of radio stations and redesigned and modified, updated, and you mentioned KCBS, and you built that plant, I believe.
I sure did.
What's that like out there in San Francisco? That one goes north and south, doesn't it?
It's a DA South the best skyway from that in Los Angeles of anything I've ever heard. The antenna was designed by a San Franciscan when the squabbling was settled over who owned what and why and where and when out there and who was going to use it. When the smoke cleared, KQW got the CP for 50 kilowatts on 740, and the antenna design went along with it.
Where are the towers?
Marin County. The pattern is, I think, 3.5 volts per meter at a mile in the main direction. 1.7 is par for a 50.
Yeah, I was going to say you could read by that, couldn't you?
I was down in L.A. one time, and, I guess that's when I've been out to measure K-Big. I'll get back to that in a minute. I was listening to KBIG on 740, where KCBS is, as I was coming up the freeway into the Hollywood area, and I went through the Hollywood Pass, and it was about 5 o'clock, and I was listening, and I didn't hear anything until all of a sudden the KCBS came through like a ton of bricks, and I listened to them solid into the valley and so forth. It was just getting towards sunset, and Skywave was coming through fine, and that 3.5 volts in the maximum direction just pouring in there like the Dickens. I've got to try to get these guys together in San Francisco and L.A., CBS people, and have them put the two together, at least for nighttime operation in Los Angeles, because KCBS covers it better than KNX does.
KCBS had a better signal in Los Angeles at night than KNX.
Parts of it, yeah.
Yeah. Who owned KBIG? It was a daytimer, correct, on 740?
Yeah. Poole, the guy who bought 740 on Catalina Island. How he got permission from the Wrigleys, I don't know.
What do you call them, the Wrigleys?
Wrigley. Chewing gum.
Oh, the Wrigleys, the owner.
The owners of the island.
Oh.
It was their island, period. I wanted to get out and make some measurements on this K-Big. So I flew out there on a DC-3 from Long Beach. My guide met me at the motel I was staying. He was an employee of Wrigley. He was going to take me up to where I wanted to go on the mountain in the background. He was carrying a sidearm in his Jeep and a lever-action carbine. Well armed. There are buffalo and boar running wild on that pasture out there. And he was going to protect me so they didn't get in trouble. If he had to shoot one down, he was going to shoot him.
That's amazing you would remember something like that. Now, was K-Big, they weren't on the mountain. You were just up there taking
They were on the mountain.
Oh, they were on the mountain with an AM stick.
With an AM. Yeah. Coming back, I flew back to Long Beach, the DC-3, and this is a very interesting takeoff. It's on top of the mountain, and the runway is not very long.
This is on Catalina.
On Catalina. It's very short in both ends, as a matter of fact.
But the middle's okay.
The middle's all right. So he revs the damn thing up with the tail almost hanging over fresh air. Full throttle, and they're shaking like, releases the brakes, go charging down the runway, full throttle, comes to the end of the runway, and dives. Well, he lifted up a little bit to get the tail over the runway. But dives, the runway is about 1,500 feet. Then he went down about 500 feet to get airspeed, took
and
off,
then up.
And wheeled back.
Hey, did you know that was going to happen?
I don't think I did, but I'll tell you, it's an attention getter. Looking out the window and, you know, the landing field's up there. Oh.
Another great visit with engineer and veteran broadcaster Augie Prestolt at his home in Nokomis, Florida. This is Mark Dernberger, the rookie on the DX Audio Service team. We hope you've made your plans to attend this year's National Radio Club Convention in Lima, Ohio, where Fred Volby is pulling out all the stops for a fabulous time. Meanwhile, we'll be back next month with the start of what should be an interesting group of columns. First, Nashville at Night, a band scan recorded last summer in the Music City. Then we take a short trip across the midsection of the country, from Minneapolis to Grand Junction, Colorado. On that trip, we'll track a selected group of 1A Clear Channel stations to see how their signals change as we drive from east to west. Also ahead on our part of the DX Audio Service, interviews with folks you know about radio, a tour of the KRVN Lexington, Nebraska 880 transmitter site, a comparison of a beverage antenna and a loop in the desert. And later, our Clear Channel capture machine is back, and we'll go back almost 30 years for some recordings to hear how the last 12 of the unduplicated Clear Channel stations sounded at night in the early 1970s, before the FCC trashed the last of the clears by allowing secondary stations to come up at night on those 12 channels. We'd love to hear from you that you like what we're doing, and we're always looking for ideas to make this a better service. My email address is durenberger@uswest.net. That's durenberger@uswest.net. And until we meet again, good listening, DXers.
KTSA, this is Dan Steele in the studio. Charlie Brown is up on the roof. We're getting ready to drop tower number one for a, what do those turnpike signs say? I guess a temporary inconvenience for a lasting improvement or something like that.
That's right. What we're doing is we're taking down our number one tower, which is the one closest to the downtown area at our four-tower complex on Eisenhower Road, in order to make more technical improvements to the station. In the interim, it will not affect the sound of the station whatsoever, so if you're a KTSA listener, you don't have to worry about that problem. What's going on right now is the tower crew is loosening the slack of the cables in which the opposite direction the tower will go and tightening up the side where the tower should fall in order that the guy lines on the opposite end will pull the tower away from any area that might cause any trouble. Hopefully when it falls, it will fall in a completely open area and we don't foresee any problems. Right now, it's still pretty safe and sound. They've loosened the first set of guy wires and the tower is still standing, which means they'll probably be moving on to the second series of guy wires. And then if it doesn't go after that second series of guy wires, it's down to one clip and we'll see what happens. But right now they've loosened the first set of guy wires and it hasn't gone over yet, so it looks like they're going to move on to the next set right now. They're waiting to see if it may happen to go right now, and after a period of time, if it does not go, they'll start to loosen the second series of the three series of wires. So right now it's still standing.
Mm-hmm. And Skylab was going to go in the water too, wasn't it?
That's right. Everybody just kind of huff and puff from east to west, and maybe it'll go over in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, as of right now, it has not gone over, so I don't know what to tell you right now. It's still here.
Well, I suppose I could play another record, but I hate to have that thing come down.
Play a real short one and monitor the line, and if I give you the word, let's come right back out here. And the series, the way it should happen is it should be about a five-second fall. It's going to take about 5 seconds for it. Now, they're getting ready to cut the second series. Wait a minute, Dan. They're getting ready to cut the first and remaining first and the second series, and it should go right about now. Stand by. They're taking off the slack of the final guy rope, and it's still standing. And as that clears the second series of wires there, they will cut the second series. So the outer guy wire is about to be completely severed right now, and it could go after that first series, and then they're ready to, right after that time, cut the second series of guy wires. So it should go in just a matter of seconds now, Dan.
That's
we're waiting
real,
to see.
Real comforting.
They're making sure that the area is clear.
Uh-huh. I see we got a lot of people parked out on Eisenhower Road.
Yeah, we do have a lot of people parked in the parking lot across the street right now.
What we need is a summer break.
Get ready. We're getting the word from downstairs on the out in the field that... So it should be I'd say they probably have about 40% of the cables cut right now, and it's still standing. There are people on each one of the three guy wires right now, and they're all going to sever the lines all at the same time with big cable cutters. So get ready. There goes one. And here it goes. It's falling right where it's supposed to go. It's coming down. Here it goes. You can hear it.
Well, KTSA was off the air for several hours after the tower fell. It seems that a transmission line to one of their other antennas was damaged during the fall, and it had to be repaired. But yes, it did make the San Antonio TV news and the local newspapers, and today KTSA and their FM sister station, KTFM, are about to be acquired by Infinity Broadcasting, giving that division of CBS their first properties in one of the fastest-growing markets in Texas.
Thanks, Wally. Now let's check out what's going on at the National Radio Club with some news and notes. From the publisher of DX News Magazine, Mr. Paul Swearingen writes, "The National Radio Club lost a member, and I lost a good friend a month ago when Topeka DXer Kurt Nutzig lost his battle with cancer. Kurt joined the National Radio Club after the Topeka convention a decade or so ago and actively DX'd and kept me abreast of the area's DX scene through phone calls and conversations over hurried lunches at Topeka High, where he occasionally served as a substitute teacher after retirement from the military. He was also a collaborator on the CC Radio Review that appeared in DX News Magazine and here on the DX Audio Service. Our prayers are sent out to Kurt's wife and family." On our CPC scene, Blaine Thompson says that he'll start sending out letters August 1st for the September 15th, 2000 dates. So it's time to start sending him stamps, targets, and donations of money for supplies. Blaine Thompson's address is Post Office Box 15762, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 46885-5762. We'll have information on the 2000 National Radio Club Convention on side two of this tape, but if you're thinking about hosting the National Radio Club Convention for 2001, Ernie Wesolowski would like to hear from you. Ernie is still accepting bids for the 2001 convention, the location of which will be announced at the Lima 2000 convention. If you'd like to send Ernie a serious bid, forward it by August the 1st to him. His last name is spelled W-E-S-O-L-O-W-S-K-I, and his address is 13312 Westwood Lane, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144. Now let's take a look at our DX change. Dick Truax is offering a K9AY loop controller and head unit with variable termination, built and tested by Al Merriman, and the same as those used in the past two Newfoundland D-Expeditions. All you need is the wire and insulators to construct the loops, and then you're in business. You can see the article in the DX News Magazine for more information. He will ship the units and a copy of the QST article on it for $130, lower 48 states. You can call Dick at area code 812-246-6377 after 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, weeknights, or most any time on the weekends. Or you can email him at the following address, k9rt@aol.com. That's Kilo 9 Romeo Tango at AOL.com. 89 WLS. Wayne Heinen would like some information verified before we go to press on the AM log. If you have some information on these stations, please contact Wayne or myself. 570 KNRS in Salt Lake City, Utah. Is this format the Family Values Talk Radio Network? 740 WIRJ in Humboldt, Tennessee. What is the format? News Talk or Oldies? 790 KUTA in Blenning, Utah. Does anyone know if these guys are still around? 810 WMGC in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Has the CP for this come on yet? 830 WXTO in Haley, Florida. Is this call WACC or WXTO? On 870 WLAM in Coram, Maine. Is this nostalgia or sports? 910 KLCN in Blytheville, Arkansas. Can anyone verify if these guys are really using the 85 watts at night? 920 WPTX in Lexington Park, Maryland. If this call goes to 1690, what call sign goes on 920? Also on 920 WIRD in Lake Placid, New York. Is this station sports or talk? 940 KXTK in Des Moines, Iowa. Is this back to talk now? 950 WROL in Boston, Massachusetts. Is this really 24 hours? 950 KXTQ in Lubbock, Texas. What is the format of this station? 960 WHYL in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Is this really 24 hours a day? 970 KCLB in Cochilla, California. Is this nostalgia in parallel to KCMJ 1140, or is it Mexican music? 970 WESO in Southbridge, Massachusetts. Is this country western or oldies? 980 WTOT in Marietta, Florida. Is the format country and western in parallel to FM 100.9? 1360 KBKB in Fort Madison, Iowa. Is this parallel to KBUR on 1490? 1400 KIGO in St. Anthony, Idaho is no longer in the FCC database, but other people say it's still around. Is it on the air or not? 1410 WSLH in Lansford, Pennsylvania. Is this really 24 hours? 1430 WBRB in Mount Clemens, Michigan. What is the format and the network of that station? 1440 WMAX in Bay City, Michigan. Is it still parallel to WTRX 1330? 1470 KYUU in Liberal, Kansas. Is this really 24 hours a day? Same goes for 1470 WLMC in Georgetown, South Carolina. Are they really 24 hours a day? 1480 WISL in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. Is this nostalgia or talk? 1480 KSDR in Watertown, South Dakota. Is this operating 0700 to 0100 only? 1490 KXBD in Biloxi, Mississippi. Is this nostalgia or ETWN? 1490 WGMF in Watkins Glen, New York. Is the call WGMF or WBZD? 1490 WPAK in Farmville, Virginia. What is the format of the station? 1570 KRHW in Sykeson, Missouri. Is this nostalgia or gospel? 1530 WBCW in Jeanette, Pennsylvania. Is this WBCW or WKTW? 1550 WUTQ in Utica, New York. Is this really 24 hours? 1550 WMRE in Charlestown, West Virginia. Is this really 24 hours? 1570 WNST in Townsend, Maryland. Is this WNST or WKDB? 1570 KMYZ in Prierton, Oklahoma. Is this really 24 hours? 1570 WTQW in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Is this really 24 hours? 1590 WRCY in Mount Vernon, Indiana. Is this WRCY or WPCO? 1590 WMIM in Mount Carmel, Pennsylvania. Is this really on 24 hours? And finally, 1600 KOKE in Pflugerville, Texas. Is this really on the air yet? And with that, let's flip over to side two.